Hello and welcome to the live webinar, targeting late 2015 for M&A opportunities. Why today is a better time to sell than a year ago? Sponsored by New Direction Partners and powered by the Printing Impressions Group. I'm Joe Polanco, President of the Printing and Imaging Association of Mid-America, and I'll be your session moderator. Our organization serves the print community in Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Western Missouri. Before we get started, let me take a second to point out the tips for attendees widget on your console. It's the blue one with the wrench on it. If you missed the Tech Tips video we played leading up to the webinar, you can always click this widget for more information about being part of the conversation. Please feel free to post your questions on the Q&A box at any time. I would now like to introduce today's presenters, Paul Riley and Jim Russell, founding partners of New Direction Partners, one of the industry's premier merger and acquisition firms. Gentlemen, you're on.
All right. Well, thank you, Joe. This is Jim Russell, and we want to thank you for moderating today and thank Printing Impressions and Packaging Printing for hosting this event. We hope all of you that are participating will find it beneficial and a good use of the next hour of your day. We're going to cover today the agenda we're going to cover is on your screen now. We're going to talk briefly about an overview of the M&A market, discuss some of the decisions of when to sell, and also explore why kind of a new trend in the last year, year and a half, why private equity is interested in the printing industry again. And throughout the webinar and at the end, we're happy to address the questions, whatever questions you may have. To start with, I want to just say that the title of this is Why Today is a Better Time to Sell Than a Year Ago. And we're going to answer that question right up front and give you four primary reasons why the market has changed for the better for sellers in the last 12 to 18 months. Number one, the general economy has improved modestly, and so there's a lot more buyers in the market today. Number two, the printing market has also improved, and we're finding a lot of companies are stronger today than they were a year or 2 years ago. Their profits are up. Their EBITDA is up. Number three, banks are lending again and lending into our industry. Even a couple of years ago, as the banks were starting to loosen their purse strings, some of them shied away from the printing industry. But today, that's not it's still the case in a few instances, but not nearly. They don't look at our industry nearly as negatively as they were 24 or 48 months ago. And finally, as I mentioned earlier, there's been an influx of private equity companies that are entering the market. And when we talk about private equity, we're not talking just about the large PE firms that are looking at Fortune 500 companies, but there are many small niche private equity firms that will look at certain segments of our industry and certain companies that could have revenue in the $10, $20 million or even smaller in some cases. So as we move on, we thought the first thing we should do is just give a brief overview of where the market has been. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Paul to handle that.
Good. Thank you, Jim. I have three economic slides that I would like to review with you. The first one is total print sales. Many of you have probably seen slides like this before. But adding to the point that Jim just made about that print sales are starting to come back, we see this in the data that's been collected by several industry economic services. So this is total sales. Obviously, we took the dip in 2009, but since then, it's starting on its way back. If we now look at the number of printing companies, we see that that has also decreased. The one point that is we want to make here today, and it's very, very strong in terms of what's driving the renewed interest and commercial printing is that the number of firms is actually decreasing less, or I should say decreasing more than the change in sales. So the remaining companies in the industry are actually on average seeing reasonable increase in their top line. That's making our industry attractive. And if you think about it, it's the people that are going out of business. There are many of them, estimated to be 1,000 to 2,000 a year in terms of facilities being closed. That is allowing the remaining people to show good growth. The next slide, may have seen this. This was put together by Ron Davis of PIA several years ago, and it's looking at the projection of commercial print shipments from 2009 to 2020. And during that period, the projection, which was for 12 years, would fall another 6.9%. But in that same period, he thought the number of plants would decrease by 30%. So that then says that the remaining plants, 70% gains, would actually on average be larger. As we see productivity, about 1% a year over sales, would actually fall 12% of sales for shipping.
Paul, your phone is breaking up. I think I'll repeat what I think Paul just said. Hopefully my phone is still clear. But basically, as he was saying on this slide, if the shipments are going to drop 7% and the plant closings are going to be 30%, on average, those companies that survive should experience some growth because those 30% of the plants, that business is going to be picked up by the remaining plants, and there should be some room for some organic growth by picking up what's left from the other plants. Continuing on, the next slide is talking about the number of transactions in the industry, and this would be the number of mergers and acquisitions. This slide is not an exact science. This is something that we put together, and it's an estimation of transaction that's involved two companies with revenue of $5 million or more. So as you can see, if you go back to the late 90s, that was when the M&A craze was going wild with Synveo and Consolidated Graphics. But really, more recently, there was a drop-off in 2007, 2008, when the industry really kind of went in the tank. But there's been a gradual increase in M&A activity over the last 4 or 5 years. And the big difference in the last probably 2 years is that many of these transactions are for a good, solid companies that are being sold at a multiple of EBITDA, where a number of the transactions in 2010, 2011, maybe even 2012 would have been distressed sales or companies that had to sell or selling or were forced to sell. So you can see that the number of transactions in the industry is stabilized and or going up slightly. The next slide is a slide that we put together at New Direction Partners, which shows the historical EBITDA multiple of both commercial printing and packaging companies and as it relates to their market cap for publicly traded companies. So the blue bar is printing companies, and the red bars are the packaging companies. And as you can see, the packaging segment of our industry trades much higher on the in the public sector than a general commercial printing company. But still, those numbers have gone up steadily for the last 3 years or stayed fairly consistent. And why this is important, even for a small company, you may say, well, what does R.R. Donnelley stock price have to do with selling my company? The higher their multiple of EBITDA that their stocks are trading at, the more they can pay for companies that they're looking to acquire, and that brings the whole market up. The whole valuation process will come up as a result of that.
Jim, maybe, Joe, we can stop for any questions that you see at this point, Joe.
Sure. In fact, Paul, something that just came up and really revolves around the discussion that you had there on Donnelley is, what do you think about R.R. Donnelley's recent announcement to split into three companies in terms of how it may impact the industry's and future M&A activity and probably PE?
Okay. First, Joe, I need to do a check. How is the clarity of the phone at this point?
Much better.
Much better. Okay. So let me attempt to respond to that question. Generally speaking, a breakup of a company from one to many is the opposite of what drives acquisitions. If you think about the economics of an acquisition, it's normally that a larger company will share a smaller piece of overhead, and therefore the profits of the new entity will be more than the profits of the two entities that were separate companies before the acquisition. So most people would ask, well, isn't that going to happen with R. Donnelley? And to some extent, the answer is correct, that will happen. But when companies do this, there's a few reasons as to why a company would split up. And the first one is that the people that manage the company will look at the multiple divisions and believes that there are divisions in the company that are growing more quickly than others, and the company isn't getting the right multiple because of that. So what their hope would be is that they would separate the company into companies that have faster growth, and in fact, they would then get rewarded in the marketplace with a higher multiple for that fast-growing part of the company. The other reason would be it has to do with management attention. Sometimes a company's gotten too big, and they actually want to put more focus on a particular division, and hopefully that division, because of that management focus, will grow quickly. But it's too early to tell what's going to happen with R. Donnelley. So I think most of us were surprised by it, but pretty much guarantee you it's one of those two reasons as to why the board of directors of R. Donnelley has decided to separate into three. Time will tell. Joe, any more questions you see?
I've got one more for you. Let's see here. This is sort of a general question. What would you recommend to a general commercial printer in terms of services that will add more value to his or her company?
Jim, you want to, I'll take a shot at that, and then you can add to it.
Yeah, that's actually Paul, about two slides forward in the deck. We're going to touch on that, so you might want to cover that in the two more slides there.
Okay, so let's hold off on that one, and we'll move to the next slide. That makes sense.
Okay.
So the next slide we have is the printing and packaging index that NDP puts together, looking at the prices of a group of commercial printers that are traded publicly and a group of packaging companies that are traded publicly. What jumps out at you in this star is, on this slide, I should say, is the red line, which is the packaging. And packaging index has done much better than on the Dow Jones Industrial Average and much better than the S&P index. So that says a lot about what's been going on with the packaging company. Actually, when you look at the bottom of this line, it's actually the S&P that's done the worst, and the printing index is actually done about what the Dow Jones Industrial Average. So part of the conclusion we talked about as to why is printing and packaging better, why are you better to sell your company today, some of it's said by this slide, and that's because the markets are viewed as being quite positive. I can go on one more slide here, and this is an index that we put together from our database at New Directions, and it's showing the range of EBITDA, EBITDA multiples paid for private companies. So we've just been talking about public companies. Now this is private, and you will see that the upper end of where we are today is approaching where we were back in 2006 and maybe even a little bit higher. And the bottom end is actually at about 4. And this is for healthy companies. These are not tuck-ins. These are companies where somebody is buying a private company, normally keeping the business intact. And there's a very strong positive trend here supporting Jim's stated conclusion earlier in the day that it is time to think about selling your company. So let me send it over to Jim now. Jim?
Okay. This next slide is to kind of address the question of what segments of the industry are growing or perhaps what can you do and to make your company more valuable. I guess to lead into an answer to that question, the starting kind of in the middle where it says non-specialized, so a general commercial printer with no specialization, we would see selling for somewhere 3 to 3.5 times their EBITDA. And as you can see, as you go down, there are certain segments of the industry that are stronger. So a book insert printer might sell for 3.25 to 4 times. And a digital printer might be a little under 4 to a little north of 4. A point of purchase printer might be 4.5 to 5. And you can see at the bottom, the more highly regarded by buyers today would be labels or flexible packaging, which would start maybe 5.25 to 5.5. Now, if you go back up to the top in the lighter gray, these are numbers that you would add to the numbers that I've just described. So if you're a company that's a little north of $3 million in EBITDA, that might get you an extra 0.25 to 0.5 point above the numbers we just talked about. If you're a much larger company and your EBITDA is greater than $10 million, you might benefit by another 0.5 to 1 full point in your EBITDA multiple. And if you're growing and can track growth, not just for 1 year, but if you have a sustainable growth and can show that for a 2 or 3 or 4 year period, and there's reason that the buyer can see that trend continuing, then you might get an extra full additional point on your multiple. So those are some of the things. So, Joe, backing up to answer your question, what can I do to make my company more valuable? Certainly, if you can segue into any of these segments, and I realize that that's not always easy to do, that's one thing you can do to make it more valuable. The other thing that is attractive to buyers today and we use the term sticky from time to time. How sticky are your clients? Are they tied in through a digital storefront where they're ordering their products online? Are you providing warehousing and distribution where it makes it difficult for that client to move their book of business? And the more you can prove and show a potential buyer that that book of business that you have is sticky and will stay with your company and you're more than just a job shop today, the more value your company can demand in the marketplace. Paul, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would summarize as follows. The value of your business is a function of how fast you're growing. So whatever you can do about getting into markets that are growing fast. Size, as Jim pointed out, critical mass. The bigger the company is, the more attraction there is, and that's because there are more people looking for larger transactions. And the third item, which we didn't cover, is and it has to do with the computation of EBITDA, is to reduce your debt. When we talk about EBITDA multiples, we're talking about the value of your company excluding debt. And if you have no debt, then your value is higher. If you have lots of debt, we're going to deduct that debt from the value of your EBITDA multiple times EBITDA. So three things: growth, grow more quickly, buy, be in markets that are growing more quickly, be larger, and pay down debt. But Joe, maybe we can go back to you and handle a few questions at this time if you have a few.
I think I've got one more for you, but I think let's see if you'll address it later on or not. That's, what do you see as the biggest mistake sellers make in an M&A transaction?
Well, I'm going to take that now, or?
Yeah, I think we can take it now. To me, and there's a couple. The first one that I'll add on is waiting too long. We particularly see this with companies that are on the edge, they're not doing well, there's always this anticipation that if I put up another year, I struggle out for another 2 years, that things will be better. And generally speaking, because of the nature of our business today, that sales line that's going down, that unless you're making significant investments in your business, companies tend to fall in both sales and in profits. There are those people that are investing, they're buying other companies, and we see just the opposite. So waiting too long would be, I would say, the number one mistake that we're seeing. How about you, Jim? What could you add to that?
No, I would agree with that, I think that, and of course, not hiring you and I to help them through the process would be a big mistake. I think that's true, and just planning for it ahead of time, and as you said earlier, getting the debt paid down, getting your house in order in a number of areas is the key to getting top dollar for your business. Moving on,
and we do see when people wait. Let me just add, John, we do see when people wait that they end up adding debt over that period of time. It's not that sales or profits are going up, that they're having to put money into the business to keep it afloat, and that even makes things worse. I would also add, just relative to making the mistake, Jim talked about it facetiously, but there's been lots of studies done that when you create an auction, you create an environment that people believe that there are multiple people interested in your business, that the value of your business goes up. We see it all the time. So we did talk about it facetiously, but it's in fact true. Holding an auction, if it isn't New Direction Partners, should be another investment banker, should be marketing your company to a wide group of potential buyers, and that's how you'll see the best price. Back to you, Jim.
All right. So the slide that's on your screen now is titled What is Happening. These next two slides are just kind of what we see going on right now in the industry. We've touched on this a little bit already, but there has been no lack of M&A activity since 2013. And this year, I think Paul and I would say that that's continued. We're having one of our busier years ever over the last 5 or 6 years. And the deal sizes are all over the map, from small companies looking to sell strategically to another local buyer, to large companies, certainly the Taylor Corp and Standard Register deal that happened recently. So there's a lot of M&A activity going on in all different size ranges. Strategic transactions remain at the core of the deal environment. It's still hard to grow organically. And it's also expensive to add new services if you're a smaller or mid-sized printer and you're looking to add a completely new service. Maybe you're moving into Flexo or something like that, or getting into large format for the first time. So many deals are getting done where companies are acquiring that new service as opposed to starting from scratch. And, again, this is both at the large publicly traded companies and also on the smaller and mid-sized deals. And growing and specialized printers are attractive to private equity. And we talked about this earlier, but we see both large private equity firms and small niche private equity firms, regional private equity firms, back engaged in our business. We sold a company last week, about a $25 million company, to a private equity firm. We're marketing a company that's even less than $10 million that's being looked at by a private equity firm because they think they can acquire it and maybe do some add-ons and grow the business. So that is a dramatic change from what was happening 18 or 24 months ago. And as we've talked about before, we're still a very fragmented industry, and we're going to continue to see businesses consolidate. Fragmented industries invariably consolidate, and we see that continuing and the number of printing companies continuing to decline. I don't need to tell any of you that are involved in the business that it's very price competitive. But the more you can do, the more value-added services you can provide, and the more you can make that customer sticky to your firm, the better multiple or the better price you're going to get when you finally decide that it's the right time to sell your business. Paul, I think the next one is, why will consolidation continue to happen? And you want to take that away?
Yes, it's, you know, one can say it's inevitable. Most all industries, printing and packaging is not different than others, that as the market growth factors, underlying growth factors get slower, more and more people will seek growth through acquisitions. This is more the case today in packaging, but as new markets in flexible Mac packaging and different substrates, we see companies buying companies that have a position in those new fast-growing markets. So the combination of certainly on the print side, contracting sales, that will drive consolidation, and in packaging, all of the new products that we see coming out will be driving acquisitions as well. So it's going to happen. It's inevitable. We only have to look at the last 20 years, particularly at our industry, and say there's been a lot of consolidation. And quite honestly, we just don't see it slowing down at all. Joe, any questions at this time?
No, we're good, Paul.
Okay, we're good. Okay. So let me go to a slide. And in fact, I guess there's another slide on why it can happen, but we have here, we talk about some of the things that have been happening in the public markets. We expect those trends to continue. With PE firms coming into the market, that brings a new source of money. There is a significant amount of money sitting in the sidelines at PE firms. We're talking in the trillions of dollars on some last reports that we have seen. And from our perspective, and I think the perspective of our industry, the return of PE buyers to our markets bodes well for a continuing robust market and an outlet for sellers. I mean, it's many, many people, it's time for them to spend some time on the beach. And PE firms will help some of those people to get here. And I think that the last item here says it all. It is easier today with our price competitive markets to grow by acquisition. It's a lot easier than doing it organically. I'm going to move on to the decisions of when to sell and not. And we'll go through some pros and we'll go through some cons. The pros would be the ability for a potential seller to combine with local companies, get that mass number that we've talked about. In fact, Jim and I are working on a transaction where three local printers have gotten together. And they are marketing themselves at one, and we're even getting some PE interest. That is a good reason to be looking to sell now versus later. We talked about the M&A market. It's healthy. It may not be as healthy as it was in 1999 or 2001, but it's as healthy as we've seen it certainly since six or seven. The multiples are higher because of the interest. I mean, it's a supply and demand situation. And this is very interesting, Mark. We didn't talk about it earlier. But traditionally, there's a difference between a public company multiple and a private company multiple that is as much as 35%. And today, it's a little bit less for private companies versus public, but nowhere near 35%. So the market is, again, I mean, that's just a sign that, that today's market is very strong because private multiples are not so distant from the public multiples. Jim alluded to it earlier about banks. We see banks back in the market. It may not be as fluid as it was in the early part of this century, but we are seeing banks lending at a senior level up to 3x EBITDA. As long as there's collateral behind that to support it. So that's pretty good numbers. It was maybe 1.5x EBITDA as little as two years ago. And to see banks lending up to 3x EBITDA on healthy, good companies is great. It's maybe not as high as it once it was 4. It was probably even in late 1990s, it may have been 5x EBITDA, but it's very, very good to see 3x EBITDA being available in the marketplace. There are, over time, we've been periods where we see activity in M&A because of uncertainty with tax policy. There's a lot of discussions today going on about a change in the tax code. We probably would all welcome some of those. But being a seller of a business, if There is some talk about capital gains increasing. It would certainly be a good time to sell one's company before any increase in capital gains. Jim, you want to talk about the cons?
Sure. If you've got a good company and you're confident that it's going to continue to grow and you can show that, then you may be able to get more for the business in the next couple of years. So that would be a reason to hold on to it. And if the stock market was to continue to go up and the public company multiples continue to go up, there's a chance also that the multiples in the private companies will come up as well. So there's a lot to think about, a lot of pros and cons to selling your business and selecting the right time to do it. But as the overall gist of this presentation is, now is about as good a time as we've seen in the last 5 to 7 years or longer, and there's a lot of interest and a lot of activity right now. We certainly, I think it's fair to say, we have many more buyers than sellers right now, and so a strong selling company will attract a lot of attention.
So, Joe, before we send it back to you for any more questions, there was one more slide we want to cover. It was in our agenda item, and that was why is private equity interested in our industry? I alluded earlier to the supply and demand situation. There is a lot of money parked on the side. People have collected money from clients, and private equity got to put it to work. These companies are of all sizes. Jim talked about regional companies. There are people that will be only in manufacturing, and we will present, meaning printing and packaging industry, will present a good image in front of people that would like manufacturing. So there is a supply situation. Segments of our industry are, in fact, very profitable. And those are the segments that private equity would be more interested in. But that's not the only ones. I mean, we have seen some private equity, and their mantra is we will buy companies and turn them around. That's their goal. And that's so they will buy a company that maybe is underperforming. Another thing that we are seeing, particularly with companies that are in the retail markets, they're in some of the book printing markets, that they are able to get long-term commitments with their clients. People who don't know our industry are somewhat brought back by the lack of long-term contracts we have with many of our customers. So, but we are seeing more and more companies have these long-term contracts. So that sends a sign to private equity that we're just not a job shop, and that will even make them more interested. And tuck-in, you know, it remains to be a fragmented industry. Very few private equity firms get into this industry thinking they're only going to buy one company. The normal MO is to buy what they call a platform company first, maybe a little larger one, and then they will add ons with additional tuck-ins. So these are the reasons why we are seeing private equity come back, and we think it's good for all of us. Joe, questions?
Sure. Got a few here for us, Paul. And again, I'd like to remind the audience that if you have any questions, there's a Q&A box if you just want to go ahead and post your question there, and we'll try to get to it. Any questions we don't get a chance to answer will be responded to by either Paul or Jim. Paul, you know, we talk about M&A in the public space, and yet, you know, predominantly this industry, probably 70% of the industry is less than $5 million in sales. You know, what do you say to that company with less than $5 million in sales that wants to sell? And what are some of the steps you think they should be taking? Are they very similar to what the suggestions you've already made, or are they different?
No, they're very much the same, Joe. It's being in a position to demonstrate that their business is stable, if not growing. Get their EBITDA up, get their debt down, and a $5 million company, there is a lot of interest. And I think if you take anybody from $5 million to, let's say, $500,000, but certainly $1 million, the most likely buyer for those companies is a local business who will look at that potential seller as an add-on opportunity, a way to replace sales that they may have lost in the marketplace. So if you're a $20, $30 million company, Jim and I could market the business nationwide. But if you're, you know, $5 million to $1 million, maybe even $500,000, there will be local companies that will certainly be interested in that business. We have a very active environment going on in New England. I think that was one of the questions. New England is a very, very active market. And we see companies there in that under $5 million range, and there are multiple people interested in buying that company.
I would also just add to that, too. We have, in that size range, in the last year, we've sold a couple companies to individual buyers that maybe were either salespeople in the industry working somewhere else or had been in the industry maybe on the equipment side or some other way connected to the industry but wanted to own their own business. And that's where the bank financing comes in. They've been able to acquire good, profitable companies with solid equipment. These were not struggling companies in either case. And through a combination of equity from the buyer, bank financing, and some seller financing, they've been able to put together very good deals that were very, very beneficial for both parties. So there are individuals out there looking at those size companies as well.
Okay, we have several questions. This one probably is a quick one to answer. Is that will you be sharing these slides with the participants? And I think Sherry's going to answer that question, and I think that that can be done easily. So next one is if from one of our owners is asking, you know, if I decide I want to sell, how long do I have to, what do you normally see as terms of how long will that person have to stay with the company after the sale? What's typical, what you see?
It depends, is always the answer. But to effectively market the company, if the owner does not have somebody running the day-to-day business, that owner would need to make a commitment at least 6 months to a year following closing before they would be able to go to the proverbial go sit on the beach. It may very well may be that the buyer will only need them for 3 or 4 months, but if a seller waits so long that they want to close and then leave, they will limit the number of people who will be interested in the business. Maybe the company down the block could pick it up. But we would always recommend to our clients that are sellers that they should be willing to and expect to stay post-closing 6 months, 12 months, depending upon the complexity of the business. It could even be 18 months or 24 months. But that you need to put that into your planning because it could be longer than just 3 months or 4 months.
Thank you. Question, have you seen any merger and activity in the business forms industry?
A little. I guess I would answer that. We have seen some on both the in the forms industry, the manufacturer side. A lot of that work is sold through the trade, through distributors. So we have seen some of that both on the manufacturing side, forms plants merging, and also some distributors teaming up and merging together or outright sales. Again, depends on the size of the company, but yes, there's activity in that that segment as well.
And Joe, I would add, we also see companies that were involved with forms who have been very inquisitive in terms of buying companies that are outside the form industry. So we've seen several companies, good companies, that made a transitions away from forms into other markets, commercial printing, transactional mail, where they were able to get a larger portion of their sales in markets that are doing better than the forms market. So we've seen them on both sides, both as buyers and sellers.
There's still existing niches out there. A question, I'm going to try to paraphrase this one here. Does the EBITDA change for an online versus local printing company? I'm assuming the person that's asking this question is someone who's predominantly heavily in storefronts or online and doing business in a much broader perspective versus a company just doing local business in a metropolitan area. Is there a bit of a change that you see?
Let me, and then Jim, maybe you can add. If you look at online companies in our chart, we did identify several of them as being more attractive marketplaces. And so generally speaking, the EBITDA multiple for an online company is higher because it's growing faster. is one of the main reasons. The other reason that I would say doesn't necessarily manifest itself in a higher multiple, but lots of interest, is that the customer base for a online company is highly portable. It can go anywhere. So the number of people we can get interested in an online business is a lot more than somebody who's just dealing with local customers.
I'd agree with what Paul said, and perhaps add also that the online business can be attractive to certain buyers. Again, when we talk about niche PE firms, private equity firms will look at that to some extent as a tech company that's marketing across the country or marketing through the internet, and they will put more value in that than a local company.
Good point.
I guess like you guys are saying, sticky customers brings a lot more value. Another question. Right. How long will it take from start to finish to get a sales done?
Longer than you think. That's always the answer to that question. If we assume the company is ready, now, sometimes people have to prepare the company for sale. But let's say the company is ready. People like Jim and I will sit down at the beginning of an engagement and say, this is what we think we can get for your company. Let's assume we're starting at that point, and that amount is acceptable to our client. It's somewhere between 9 and 12 months after that point in time. Sometimes a transaction will get done in 6 months. Maybe once or twice we've gotten transactions done in 5 months from that point. But it's a period, if you want to do it right, it takes longer than you think. And part of doing it right includes things like putting together marketing materials, putting together a book that describes the value of a company that's being marketed for sale. And then you go market it, and lots of things happen in the marketing. People need to get on phones together. People need to get together and visit facilities. That doesn't happen overnight. And then you can agree on a price for a company after you have maybe multiple people negotiating a price. And then it's 75 days to 90 days after that to get the due diligence done and to close. So it's longer than you would think, but certainly you gotta think of 9 months. I would not count on 6 months, even though sometimes it gets done in 6 months. But many times it's up to 12 months from the time you decide to sell the business to get it sold.
Jim or Paul, just to add to that, how often do you see the deals go even further once the lawyers get involved? In other words, you pretty well, two parties come to an agreement, they like what they're seeing and selling or buying, whatever it might be, and they say, okay, we're ready, we like the deal, let's make it happen. Is that point in time when the attorneys and all the legal stuff come on, is that half the time that can be consumed or less or more?
I think that depends to a large extent on the relationship both parties have with their legal counsel. We've certainly seen incidents where if the parties instruct their counsel properly and there's a relationship there and the counsel understands their job is to get the deal done per the terms of the letter of intent and they work together, both counsels on both sides, it can go very smoothly. But like anything, if there's a disconnect there, if everyone's trying to get their own way on minutia details, if there's stubbornness involved, and it can get out of control. And so there's no good way to answer that, but there is coaching and instructions that can be done early in that process to hopefully help it move smoother.
Yeah. One of the hurdles that Jim and I sometimes will deal with is the advisors, the other advisors that may be involved in a transaction. And buying and selling a company from both ends, there's risk. It's not a riskless transaction. So the seller takes on risk and the buyer takes on risk. There are some advisors that people hire, sometimes lawyers, sometimes accountants, and they tend to be risk-averse people. And they can actually hold up a client, hold up a transaction, sometimes even kill a transaction because they're being unreasonable about the risk that they see within a transaction. So Jim and I will always recommend that the people advising both the buyer and seller should have experience, and we're talking about accountants and lawyers, would have experience in buying and selling companies.
Thank you, Paul. Good words. One more question here. Then we have one more question, but if you have any other questions you'd like to ask, please post them. We have a question. Is there any growth potential on the under three-collar packaging marketplace?
I'm not so sure I'm following the point about potential. Is there potential for under three-collar packaging companies to be sold? The answer is yes. There will always be somebody willing to look at companies like that as being a subset of what they're doing. So, I'm not so sure I fully understand the question, but the answer would somebody be interested? The answer is yes.
Let me put my spin on this is with the, I'll say the marketing we're seeing right now in the digital area where a lot of folks are talking about digital devices entering into the small short run areas of packaging. Do you see that as, again, another market potential when you start looking at that short run end of the packaging of firms that are doing, 8 and 5 and 6 million versus the rock tens of the world?
Even more so. The answer is absolutely positively yes. We are actually seeing that those people, the rock tens of the world, that they're interested in these companies that have done a good job at nurturing that short run, smaller, you know, it could be a smaller food company that's buying the package, a smaller cosmetic company. But there's a special talent in dealing with the non-majors buyers of packaging. And absolutely positively, there is strong interest, if not even greater interest than the big packaging lines. It's we are finding that those companies tend to be in niches where everything isn't price. It's service. It's treating a medium-sized customer as a big customer and providing them with, you know, different substrates and that sort of matter. So the answer is absolutely yes, Joe.
Jim, anything else to add to that?
No, I think Paul is absolutely right. There'd be a lot of interest in those size companies. It's an attractive market. It's a growing market. And so, yeah, he hit the nail on the head.
Gentlemen, thank you very much. It looks like we're about out of time today. We have no more questions at this point in time. If you did post a question and we missed it, Jim will be responding to those, and so just keep your eyes open. On behalf of New Direction Partners, Printing Impressions and Packaging Printing, I want to thank everyone for attending today's webinar. Be sure to check out our webinar page to get information on all our archived and upcoming webinars. Also, please take a few minutes to fill out the brief feedback survey that will appear on your screen next. We would be grateful for your response, and your feedback will influence the webinars we bring to you in the future. I hope to see you at the next Printing Impressions webinar. On behalf of Printing Impressions and myself, Joe Polanco, thanks for joining us.